and welcome to our Delaware Valley. I'm Laura Lewis, and with us today, George Clark. He is a postal inspector for the United States Postal Inspection Service.
Good morning. Thank you, Laura.
We are recording, of course, today in a horrendous snowstorm, proof that neither snow nor sleet nor rain, etc. And that was a joke there. But before the show began, I did ask you, I said, wow, you're the NCIS of the post office, aren't you?
I guess that is a fair comparison. We don't think of ourselves that way, but yes, we are federal law enforcement officers. We're a federal agency. We're probably close to the same size as the NCIS, but instead of the Navy, we work for the post office.
When did you launch and talk a little bit about it?
Well, you know, the inspection service likes to claim being the oldest federal law enforcement agency in the United States. And we actually trace our history back to before the founding of the country. Back when Benjamin Franklin was setting up the post office under the colonial rule of England, one of the things that he realized he needed to do was he needed to have a group of, for lack of a better term, agents, I think he called them surveyors back then, that would be able to collect and audit the funds that the various post offices around the colonies were collecting to pay for the services. And that's where we trace our origins to. And we still, to this day, do revenue protection work for the post office.
You are charged with investigating crime. You interrogate. Yeah. You have your own, I believe you have your own labs, et cetera. You're gun carrying, badge carrying, real police officers.
Absolutely. We like to think of ourselves as such. But so, I mean, listen, just a little background. You know, most people think of federal law enforcement. They'll think of the FBI, maybe the DEA, maybe NCIS today because of the TV show. I mean, the fact of the matter is all of these agencies that I just named, Postal Inspection Service, and there are numerous other ones, smaller ones, but they're all, many of them have federal law enforcement criminal investigators, special agents. And for all intents and purposes, they have pretty close to the same authority, but they work for maybe different agencies, thus have different priorities. Now, the Federal Bureau of Investigation is our general law enforcement agency for the federal government, for the, you know, federal system. But, you know, we enforce many of the same laws. We could be asked to join investigations that maybe have nothing to do with the post office. For example, we were asked by Congress to investigate Ruby Ridge, the shooting at Ruby Ridge. Now, this is going back 25 plus years ago, or the unfortunate incidents at the Waco compound. We were asked by Congress and the Attorney General to assist in the follow-up investigations in those matters. So, and that can happen. But we work for the post office, so 99.9% of what we do is in support of the post office, and that's who pays our bills, and that's who we are responsive to. So we investigate drug dealing, we investigate frauds, but we try and make sure that we do so, or we try and make sure that the cases in which we participate in are largely connected to the post office, whether it's using the mails to ship drugs or using the mails to steal checks out of people's you know, pockets, or using or robbing the post office, or robbing parcels from mail trucks. I mean, that's where we try and focus our energies. But you did mention we have our own forensic lab. We have computer labs around the country to support our mission. We have our own academy where we all, you know, whereas postal inspectors, we train at. It's a very nice facility down outside Washington in Potomac, Maryland. And it's actually a training facility for the post office where they do a lot of training. And they open the facility up to outside organizations as the space is allowed. And we have our own little part of the campus. But the benefit for us is because it's sort of run like a hotel, we have decent food there, which I'm not sure all the law enforcement academies can say. But yeah, we have our own academy. We learn how to handle weapons. We get legal training. We learn how to process crime scenes. We have cars with lights and sirens that fortunately we don't have to use too often, but occasionally we do. We, you know, if there's a, say today, there's a ugly storm here in Philadelphia, and if there were a truck that were to have a really nasty accident, a mail truck that were to have a nasty accident, some of us would probably have to respond in an emergent circumstance and assist, you know, the local police and make sure that the mail is secure and that it gets picked up and delivered, or at least secured, and back to the plant, assuming everyone's okay. Which would be the priority. So, yeah, we're law enforcement officers. Absolutely.
Well, this conversation was prompted by Consumer Protection Week. And we're going to talk about consumer fraud and the rotten things that people do to each other. You also, though, are involved in the more heinous crimes, situations of pipe bombs, child pornography. You alluded to that. Drugs. They all can use the Postal Service and do use the Postal Service. And so you're obviously working with the other agencies on some pretty major crimes.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. Pipe bombs, narcotics investigations, violence or child pornography, violence against mail carriers, which unfortunately every year they're, mailmen and women are robbed and sometimes violently. You know, we recently had a mail carrier, a female mail carrier that was kidnapped at gunpoint here in Philadelphia. And the person was looking for parcels and because we're carrying a lot of parcels. So it's we responded to that. We investigated that. And we fortunately were able to arrest someone with the assistance of, in that case, the assistance of the Philadelphia Police Department. So, yeah, I mean, we work with the other agencies on many of our investigations. If we're working narcotics, oftentimes we'll work with Philadelphia Police, other local law enforcement in the area, sometimes the DEA, sometimes the FBI, sometimes Homeland Security, because all these agencies have a nexus to what's happening in that case to a drug investigation and an interest in bringing it to a resolution and finding the people doing it, finding the people responsible for distributing the drugs in Philadelphia. There's multiple agencies who have an interest in working those cases. So we are regularly working our cases with other law enforcement. A pipe bomb is an interesting one because, when a pipe bomb is shipped through the mail, which fortunately doesn't happen too often, but it does, we obviously have, I'll use this term loosely in the federal system. I think it's a little less applicable, but jurisdiction in the federal system isn't so strict as it might be in the local system. But, we'll have reason to participate in the investigation. But so will the ATF, the Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearm Agency. So will the FBI, because they'll view it as a terrorist circumstance. And if it's whatever local jurisdiction, obviously they have an interest in participating and finding out what happened and bringing the person who sent that bomb to justice. So, I mean, those sorts of investigations quickly bring multiple investigators from multiple agencies together. And, there is always in the beginning, there's sometimes some hand wringing about who's going to take charge and who's going to lead. And it's human nature, I suppose. But, those issues quickly get worked out and you quickly find yourself as part of a team, breaking down leads, following them up, generating more leads, working with the prosecutor's office, and with a little bit of luck, in most cases involve a little bit of luck, finding out who was responsible and charging them.
If you're just joining us, this is Our Delaware Valley. I'm Laura Lewis, and today, Postal Inspector George Clark is our guest from the United States Postal Inspection Service. And if you'd like more information about what we are talking about, go to his agency, USPIS.gov. That's USPIS.gov. So there seem to be two different kinds of crime going on with the mail, the kind where people are shipping exotic animals and snake eggs and birds. And we're doing this by Zoom. You're shaking your head.
That happens.
Right. And the terrible crimes of pornography and exploitation for children and also pipe bombs and things like this. But then you get your everyday some rotten guy or gal out there is using the post office to defraud the public. And so we're not talking about stealing your grandma's Social Security check. We're talking about real intended crimes that target vulnerable populations. Let's talk about what's going on out there. How do we recognize fraud and talk about those situations?
Well, Laura, thank you. We're talking here around the time of Consumer Protection Week, but the fact of the matter is consumer protection doesn't just happen one week. And really, it's incumbent on everybody to recognize how not to become a victim of fraud. And we'll move into that, but I'll just say that is where we as an agency probably spend many of our investigative hours. Perhaps somewhere between 30 and 50% of our investigative hours go towards investigating what in broad terms is categorized as consumer fraud. And these will include things like lottery schemes, which are God knows how many thousands of years old, some version of it, you know, lottery or sweepstakes schemes, romance schemes, work at home schemes, reshipper schemes. And I'll break them down real quick. But, you know, a lottery scheme is and sweepstakes scheme is people receive something in the mail or over the internet that they have won something, often in a lottery that they've never, ever played. You know, we're not talking about, you know, our state lotteries here. We're talking about, you know, the El Jumbo from Japan or the Gordo from Spain. I mean, these are names that have been recycled for decades and decades. And they'll say, you know, you've won $1 million. Contact this phone number or send an email away to this email address and we'll tell you how to claim your winnings. And what will always happen is they will tell you, you know, in this far off jurisdiction where you've won money, you know, things work a little differently here. You need to pay your taxes up front. You need to pay your processing fees. There's an attorney that's going to help you get the money out of the government, and they have to be paid. And as long as you're paying, they'll find a reason that you have to pay more. And that just doesn't happen. I mean, that's not how a real lottery would work. But people, they lose their train of thought. They lose their sense of what's right and wrong or what's real and not real when they are, you know, looking at that $1 million they think they've won. Romance scams are completely different, but they too prey upon similar people who are looking for something that's missing, I guess. Obviously, romance in that case. You know, the plethora, the number of online, you know, dating apps and dating websites have really open the door for this. People, you know, go onto these apps and websites looking for companionship, love even, and, you know, someone will scratch that itch on the other end of the computer, and they'll seem like a wonderful person. They'll say all the right things. They'll have pictures that are, you know, good looking. They'll establish that relationship. The communication will transition often from the app to email, from email to telephone calls. And once they feel that they have established, you know, a level of trust, they'll start asking you for money. Usually the few of the stories I've come across in my own work is, you know, I'm a engineer in Turkey building a bridge, or I'm a doctor in Bangladesh building a children's hospital or something. They are signaling that they're a professional, that they are doing really good work somewhere, like God's work of some sort. And that establishes that this person is a good person, a professional person, a reliable person, a person of moderate, if not more than moderate means. So, you know, people get sucked in by this, but for whatever reason, they've run into financial troubles. The local authorities don't like the hospital I'm building. They think that I'm somehow undermining them, and they've jailed me. I need money to get out of jail, or my project has run out of money or something. Can you help me? Is how it will go when they have that level of trust. And all of a sudden you find yourself, or these victims find themselves, sending money away. And really the person on the other end of that computer, that romance, is not an engineer, is not a doctor. They are a ne'er-do-well in some far off part of the world. And they're all over. They're Africa and Europe and the Philippines and Central America. I mean, they could be any number of places. So those are sad, sad cases. I've seen individuals send over $500,000 away to people they thought they were in love with. And then you also have your work at home schemes. People who are out of work or looking for extra cash, they come across an ad on one of the job boards on the internet. It used to be, I'm sure, you know, classified ads in newspapers. And it says, you know, stuff envelopes, make a several hundred dollars a week from your couch. And what will happen is there'll be any number of schemes that you'll get yourself involved with here. You might be stuffing fake checks. They'll have you get interested, you communicate with them, and they set you up, and they start emailing you files and telling you, and this is where it gets, I mean, these days it's just amazing, because, you know, there's no money being spent by the bad guys. Like, you're buying the paper, you're buying the printer, you know, you need to get special check paper. What we want you to do is we're going to send you files, you print out the checks, you stuff the envelopes, you put the postage on, and those are fake checks. And what's basically you're getting yourself wrapped up into is they're sending out these fake checks. They have lists of people that they want to have receive these fake checks. And the idea is the person who receives the fake check is a victim of a different scheme. They deposit the check. They're then told to wire money to somewhere, we'll say Jamaica. And a couple days later, the bank comes back and says, hey, that, by the way, that check was fake. So that $1,000 you thought you deposited, you didn't deposit it. It's not there.
So two people are defrauded here. I was wondering where the money was being made by the Nigerian prince in this story. So, aha.
There you go. That's right. Two people are being defrauded because, you know, we'll back up to the person stuffing the envelopes. They usually don't get paid. They put all this work in. They spend this money. And they're not getting any payment for their work.
I really want to ask you about charity, because when we were talking about romance a moment ago, we kind of slid sideways away from I want to buy new clothes before I meet you, send me a check for a new suit, to being taken in by the idea that you are supporting orphans in another country or a religious order on in the other side of the world. Charity defrauding.
No, absolutely. Charity fraud. I haven't mentioned it yet, but I've worked some charity fraud cases. I had a case a bunch of years ago where these two individuals were calling small businesses around the country. They were calling from here in Bucks County, and they were calling small businesses, telling them that they were publishing they supported local police departments, and they were publishing ad books. You know, the sort of ad books that many of us might remember seeing at Little League games or stuff like that in your local pizza parlor, and an auto mechanic bought ads to support the Little League, and they might be distributed at the Little League. You know, they were claiming to publish these sorts of books supporting police departments, and they would give money allegedly to your local police department. The problem was they were calling businesses from Alaska to the tip of Florida, from San Diego to northern Maine. And, you know, so obviously what they were telling the small business on the other end of the phone was a lie. And just to top it all off, not surprisingly, they weren't publishing any book. Why would they? I mean, they're sitting in Bucks County collecting ads from a vet in Alaska to a bar in Key West. And what kind of book are they going to publish? And they were making millions of dollars just working the phone a couple hours a day. And you know, that sort of fraud, charity fraud, we'll call it, happens all the time. People really need to be careful when they're being contacted by, you know, charities that, and I hate to say this because there are many good charities out there. So I don't want to, I'm certainly not trying to scare people away from, you know, donating money to good charities, but they just have to do a little research, because kids, disabled kids, veterans, fire departments, police departments, first responders, those sorts of, you know, topical areas are unfortunately rife with alleged charities that really are not doing any good work except for lining the pockets of a few people that are running them. And, you know, so people just need to, you know, and for all of these schemes, and the charity ones are an easy one, before you send some money away to a mailing or a phone call, do a little work on the computer. Google the organization. You'll find that you will immediately, I mean, it's one of the first things I do when I initiate an investigation, is I'll sit down at Google and I will see what the community is saying about my alleged target. So if you're contacted by a charity that's helping veterans of the Iraq War, whatever their name is, put it into Google or whatever search engine you like using, because I'm not promoting one over the other. You'll find pretty quickly, right there in the first couple results, whether other people have uncovered that this group is not doing what they say, or on the flip side, that this group is doing what they say they're doing. And, you know, same thing will back up to the work at home schemes. You get contacted, or you want to respond to a classified ad, Google or look up the name of the company that's contacted you. Maybe there's a phone number. Maybe there's an address. Look those up using the internet. And you'll very quickly find other people have identified those, you know, those identifiers, whether it's a phone number, an address, a company name, as being connected to a fraud. And that should be enough, in my opinion, to tell you as a potential victim to stop whatever you're doing. I'm not going to fall victim to this scheme. And the romance ones, listen, the internet search engine might be a little more difficult to use. But if they start representing to you, I work for so-and-so hospital, I work for so-and-so engineering company, take those identifiers and see if those companies are real. See if the person that you're communicating with in fact, works there, if they are a well-regarded senior engineer in a well-established engineering firm, they'll probably be able to find some presence of previous things they've done. And these are like little steps you can take to protect yourself, because at the end of the day, we respond to crime. And I'm here trying to educate, but for the most part, you know, me and most other law enforcement officers respond to crime. And we would love to help protect people, but people really have to protect themselves. And, you know, by the time we're involved, it probably means someone's been victimized already. And that's just the unfortunate truth of the matter.
I mentioned the most vulnerable populations, and that can be the elderly or people who do not have access, internet access, especially in pandemic time when you're not going to your library or your center where you have access. What about grandparent schemes, really quickly? And then I want to just quick talk about a little bit about remedies or what you can do if you have been defrauded and how we help you in your work.
Well, Laura, your point is absolutely fair. And for people that don't have access or feel comfortable using a computer, and talk to friends, talk to family, you know, hey, I am getting involved in a relationship with this guy. What do you think? He says he's a doctor building a children's hospital in Bangladesh. What do you think of this? You know, have that conversation. Hey, I'm thinking about working from home. This company said all I have to do is stuff some envelopes from my couch. You know, maybe they can help you. Maybe that person, whether it's kids, you know, friends from work, former colleagues, just contemporaries that you like to talk to, whatever the case might be. Maybe they have comfort or access to the internet, or maybe just the sound, using them as a sounding board. I mean, at the end of the day, that's the best we can do. And if you really listen, if you really are at a loss, you can call our hotline. I'm pretty confident that someone will circle back around with you and have that conversation from our organization. There are plenty of resources out there for people to have those conversations. So that's really what can do. And I will tell you, Laura, even given that, I have run across people that just don't have anyone to talk to. So it's difficult to know what to tell people that are uncomfortable using a computer, don't have access to computers or the internet, and don't have anyone to talk to. I mean, that's, you know, talk to a neighbor, maybe. You know, I feel bad even thinking about it, but I've run across people that just don't have anyone left to talk to. So it's difficult. You mentioned grandparent schemes. Obviously, they their very nature, they target older people, maybe not exclusively, but the gist of the scheme is you receive a phone call or an email message, usually a phone call, telling you that your grandson is, this is usually how it goes, is in jail in some other country and they need bail money. You know, $5,000 will get him out of jail. Or the person represents that they're your grandson's attorney and that he needs to get paid to get your grandson out of jail. And this needs to happen now. Now. And that will be your cue. That will be your cue. And for a lot of these schemes, listen, another red flag is immediacy. This has to happen today. I need you to go before the banks close today or the post office closes today, to send me that money or pull that money out of your account or whatever the case might be. And that has to be in that situation where you are receiving a phone call out of the blue and you are not sure what to do and you're afraid for your grandson, but you didn't know that your grandson was, you know, traveling through Costa Rica. That caught you by surprise. That might be a red flag, but also the immediacy of what needs to happen. And you just tell the person, I can't do that. I can't get to the bank today, maybe tomorrow. And then that gives you the opportunity to, you know, make those phone calls that you need to make to find out if, in fact, your grandson is in trouble in Costa Rica or wherever.
Another one that surprises me is that you don't even send cash. You send gift cards.
Well, you don't even send gift cards, Laura. These days, what happens is, thank you. You're helping me out here. You're raising yet another red flag. What happens is they will ask, the very generalized they, the bad guys here, will ask you to go buy a gift card. And you don't even have to go anywhere these days. You can get these virtual gift cards, Apple gift cards. And what they'll have you do is send them the number, like essentially the credit card number on that gift card, the identifying number. And once they have that number, they can access the money. So we come across, in our investigations, we'll come across situations where people will have hundreds of gift cards that used gift cards they just haven't thrown out yet, because they have been buying these gift cards, sending either via the telephone or over messaging service of some sort, the numbers away. And, you know, that money is then being pulled off those cards, transferred to another account, whatever, in some far off place, and it's gone. And, you know, I mentioned earlier, I'll get to the money. A lot of these consumer frauds that I'm talking about today, and that just consistently and routinely victimize Americans for hundreds of millions, if not billions of dollars each, the money ends up in places where we really just can't get it. Once it's across the border, once it's out of the country, it becomes very difficult, if not impossible, to go get, let alone investigate who at the other end of that transaction, who that person is at the other end of that transaction. You know, people think that U.S. law enforcement is, because TV and movies give this impression that we have powers that we just don't have. And there are fraudsters in Canada. And I personally love, and I can look forward to going back to Canada. Montreal is a beautiful city and they have beautiful skiing and mountains. But Canada is a separate country, believe it or not. I mean, it looks and feels like the United States, but it is its own country. And those fraudsters are protected by the fact that we can't go up there. I just use Canada because it is our dear neighbor that feels and looks and shares many of the same values that we do. But it is a separate country, a sovereign country. And to investigate crimes that cross into Canada, we have to go through our State Department. We have to go through the Canadian version of their State Department, their Justice Department. And we have to engage then, after we've done all of that, with their local law enforcement to then help us. And then they have to transmit whatever they find all the way back through that chain. And I can just tell you, that is a lot of work and it's time consuming. And if we're chasing down $1,000 that ended up in Canada, I hate to say it, but that work just is not going to happen.
How do we help you, and how do we help our neighbors?
Listen, if you've been victimized or if you know someone that's been victimized, gather as much information as possible and file a complaint, whether it's with us or your local police department, the state attorney general's office, whether you're in New Jersey, Pennsylvania, Delaware. Most state attorney general's offices find one of their niches to be consumer protection and consumer fraud work. The FBI, the FTC, listen, those complaints, ultimately, they get all brought together and we all have access. But the more you're able to put in those complaints, identifiers, telephone numbers, email addresses, names, and if it's more old-fashioned, license plates, times of day, descriptions of people that may have been involved. The more you can put in there, the more leads that we can generate from your complaint. There's a greater likelihood we'll be successful. And listen, it's so cliched to say that, but if it's too good to be true, it probably is. So take a deep breath, before you send money away to some place that you're not familiar with, to some person that you don't know. Think about what you're doing. Take a deep breath. Talk to someone. Use the, if you have access, use the internet to do some research. Make some phone calls. Keep your money. At the end of the day, you worked hard to earn it, and sending it away to, a Nigerian prince is probably not what you want to do with it.
And of course, you have tips on your website?
We have a lot of tips on our website. Absolutely. We have the ability to complain, to file complaints on our website. Hopefully not about me, but, if you've been victimized, you can file complaints on our website. And we have lots of tips and educational materials, case examples that we've worked. If anyone's interested in becoming a postal inspector, we have a whole section on careers in our agency. It's a wonderful place to work, I think.
And that website is USPIS for the United States Postal Inspection Service, USPIS.gov. But again, take away immediacy, bad, too good to be true, bad. Take a moment, breathe, think it through, and talk to somebody. And if you do have your suspicions, gather up everything that you have and reach out to the United States Postal Inspection Service at USPIS.gov. My guest today, Postal Inspector George Clark of the United States Postal Service. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
This has been fun. We must do this again.
Laura, I'd love to.
Thank you so much. I'm Laura Lewis. This has been our Delaware Valley.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' on You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.